Hey family, before we get started, this episode contains conversation around foster care, sexual abuse, and other sensitive topics. Take care while listening. Hey friends, welcome back to another episode of Justice for All. Today I have a few friends with me from Royal Family Kids. Royal Family is a nonprofit that focuses on changing the lives of kids from the foster care system. At Royal Family, kids encounter unconditional love and healthy connections with trained adults through camp, club, and mentoring. I have Jeannie, who has been part of Royal Family for nearly 10 years. Kim started with Royal Family as a teenager, and Ed has been with Royal Family for around 11 years. All three have extensive experience in working with kiddos who are part of the foster care system. You'll see that each have their own specialty and experiences when it comes to working with kids who have experienced trauma. So welcome to the show, the Royal Family Kids team.
Thanks for having us.
This is exciting.
Awesome. Thank you for being here. I've been looking forward to this for a really long time. I love foster kids, adoptive kids. We have a foster adopt support group here that falls under my care, and this is one of my biggest passions. So I am very honored to be sitting around a table with you three.
Thank you, Kenzie. So sweet.
Yeah. So before we get started, I ask the same question to everyone to get the show started. When did you first know you wanted to pursue justice work? Ed, do you want to kick us off?
It's a little bit tough to the extent of I never knew that I wanted to do this until I did it. So here's the story. So came to church one Sunday here at Southeast, and they had brought in the guy that started Royal Family, right? This is 10 or 12 years ago. And he was telling stories about kids that were locked in closets and chained in their room and didn't eat for days and were beaten relentlessly and raped and et cetera, et cetera. And at the end of it, the ask was, we need people that can take a week off work and come volunteer at this camp, right? And understand that I'm single, no kids. And for the most part, never really wanted kids, right? And so my first thought was, well, I'm self-employed, so I can take a week off work. Maybe this is something that I should do. But I left church that day and really didn't have any intention of actually doing it. It was just kind of a fleeting thought, right? Every day after that, I just kept being reminded of, like, you should just apply and see what happens, right? Just over and over, like it was bothering me. And this is not particularly something normal for me where I feel that push like that. And so I decided, because you also have to remember, I'm 44. This is 10 or 12 years ago. I only really became a Christian when I was 27, 28 years old. So this is very new into my Christian life, right? And so I applied, and then literally, like, leading up to it, it was kind of a joke amongst my friends. Like, you're going to go do a kids camp? Like, this is going to be hilarious. How terrible this is going to go for you, right?
No.
And so, seriously, like, I remembered the drive up to my first camp. Like, I was so nervous because I was nervous it was going to go terribly wrong, right? I mean, they train you about, you know, they're going to spit in your face potentially and, you know, all of this. And I'm just like, oh, this is going to go terribly wrong, right? And all my friends have said, oh, this is going to go terribly wrong. I get back from camp, and at the time, I'm living with my best friend, and he gets home. And he's just like, oh my gosh, how was it? And I, without hesitation, I was like, it's the coolest thing I've ever done in my whole entire life.
Wow.
And I was like hooked.
Oh, that's so cool.
It was, and ever since then, I've just had a passion for it. Like when the, you know, opportunity to start the mentor side of things came along, it was, there was no hesitation there. It was like, all right, I'll do it. Sure.
Right.
Yeah, let's do this.
That's so
like this
good.
Needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And if no one else is going to do it, I'll do it. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, Kim, what about you?
Thank you. I just love hearing that story. It never gets old for me. Well, for me, the passion started when I was 17. Our founder, Pastor Wayne Tesh, went to my little church in Southern California, and he was a youth pastor and then an associate pastor, and he started talking about this vision that God had given him for children of all races that have come from the foster care system. And because of my own personal journey, I had a really toxic relationship with a Bible teacher at my Christian school in middle school for 3 years. He was a pedophile. And so walking away from that experience, my parents were awesome and they believed me, but I kept this secret for 3 years when this was happening, the abuse was happening. And so I was so passionate to tell children that it wasn't their fault, that God redeems all of our broken places. And I couldn't wait to start volunteering with Royal Family, so I had to be 18. And so I volunteered the first year when I was 18. And I was looking at pictures yesterday. I found some pictures when I was 18. And looking at my little girls who now, 35 years ago, how old they must be now. But anyway, it's just been a passion of mine for years and years. So I'm so grateful to Southeast and all these beautiful leaders that are sitting around this table who have joined the mission.
Thank you for sharing. Jeannie, what about you?
I was at a point in my life where I was very blessed and able to retire early. And quite frankly, was looking for something. How was I going to fill my time? How was I going to give myself some purpose since I no longer had this career? And I was volunteering at the church and heard about Royal Family. Didn't really know what it was. The name intrigued me. And all I can say is that the Holy Spirit prompted me to go to this information meeting. And I went and I heard this sweet person presenting and talking, Kim, referring to Kim. And I was sold. Okay, I want to do this. I could never commit myself to a week away from work for things like this or travel. Just work was all consuming. And this was a time in my life where I was open to it and the Holy Spirit moved me. Mm. So I've been doing it ever since.
Yeah. Oh, that's incredible. Thank you three so much for sharing your stories on how you get involved in justice work, how the Lord calls you to specific areas of work where your skills and the things that you're called to can just align so well with his heart for people. I want to dive in now to, what is Royal Family Kids? What is it all about? What are the programs that Royal Family Kids offers? Yeah, what are you all about? Kim, I would love for you to start off. You've been part of Royal Family for a really long time.
I love Royal Family. Well, we're a national organization, which is really fun because we have support and accountability from, a national board of directors as well as a national team. They're located in California. And there are chapters across the country, really, and now across the world. We're international as well. And so God moves is he calls folks from local churches, and they put a team together, and we go to director's training, and Ed's been to mentor training, and we've been to Royal Family Kids Camp training, and we get to see what a camp looks like, and then we get training, and then we come back to our a local church, and we work, we interface with local social services. So we've been in a wonderful relationship with Tri-County's Collaborative Foster Care these last 12 years, and they support us by sending social workers to our camp, and they are amazing heroes to help us and support us. And then we recruit and raise money, and Southeast has been an amazing, beautiful support to us all of these years. And so then we put on a free week of camp for children from the foster care system, and it's a residential area. We go to a university, local university, and children experience the extravagant love of Father God and of the Holy Spirit and Jesus, and through these amazing volunteers who come and give their time and their talents, and they raise money, and we all get to do this beautiful week together. And then our mentor program runs year round as well. So it's just God's miraculous hand of grace that we do it every single year. He puts all the pieces together.
Yeah. So you talked about mentoring. I would love, Ed, for you to tease that out a little bit, the mentoring piece. We also, before this, we're talking about the teen camp. I would love for you to kind of dive into those pieces of Royal Family.
All right. So it's technically a mentoring club program is what we have. So the way that it works is that the volunteers and the kids from camp kind of dovetail into this program that we start in September, and it goes through May. And the idea is that at minimum once a month, first Saturday of the month, we do a kids club, right? And so imagine the idea, all the kids from camp, volunteers from camp, so they know other kids, they have relationships with these other kids, they also know a lot of the adults, if not all the adults. They come here to the church and we spend 2 hours doing a lot of the same things. So worship singing, arts and crafts, a Bible story. Every month we have a different kind of theme. And so we have different themed activities, whether it's like making a kite that we can then take out and fly right then. Or we do Minute to Win It. We do a talent show every year, which is the best one, if you ask me. Santa comes every year on Christmas and they all get Christmas presents. So as you can imagine, right, we have these themed activities. As well as that club, we do a couple of other things. So the mentor side of things is the idea that we try to find volunteers that are willing to commit to mentor a kid for that 9-month period, right? That obligation is really 4 hours per month is the expectation, 4 hours or more per month that they can do anything with them. So whether that's take them out to lunch or dinner, take them to different events, help them do their homework. I mean, we don't really necessarily care, right? The whole idea is to just provide an additional adult role model, right? If you can imagine, these kids have not had good adult role models. That's why they're not living with their parents, is because that role model was not a good role model. Their foster parents might be, but again, that's more of the parent relationship. We're trying to establish something that's not a parent or a teacher, not an authoritarian relationship, let's say. And it's just a friendly relationship, right? And that person is also a believer, right? So you can imagine the stuff that comes with that. So because of the mentor program, we started doing once a month activities. So imagine first Saturday we do club, and then third Saturday or so, we do everything from take them to a Rockies game, a Nuggets game. This last weekend, we took a bunch of kids to the Parker Rec Center to go swimming, boondocks, plays, museums, you name it, we want to do it. And we provide all the transportation and pay for all of this stuff out of our budget and the funds that we raise and stuff like that. So that's kind of the basic summary of the program. So it goes September to May, and then June we have camp. So it's just constantly keeping them involved in this family of believers. And also kids, and this is one of my favorite parts of the whole program, is watching the kids interact, because the kids become longer-term friends too, right? Imagine you're a kid in foster. What's something that you can't just come out at school about? That you're in foster, right? It's not going to go well, right? At Royal Family, you can, and you see it all the time. They're like, who are you staying with? Who? Oh, that's your foster brother? Oh, okay, yeah. And we'll even see kids that used to be foster siblings that aren't anymore, like reunited, or actual bio siblings that are reunited, things like that. They're just really cool experiences where they can kind of be themselves and kind of be outed, right? That, hey, I'm in foster because my mom's a drug addict and can't keep me, but that's okay because you're in foster too, right? Maybe for a totally different reason, but the shame is washed away, right? Which is so cool to see. And they just can like let their guard down and just be kids, right? Which is, again, it gives me goosebumps just to talk about it. It's so cool to see.
That's so good. I think what I love about that is this like beautiful picture of family coming together. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't even have to be like, you know, siblings from the same family. It can be wow, you were my foster sibling for, you know, X amount of years or even months, really. And then they can come back together and feel that connection, this like holy connection that we're meant and we're built for, which I love. Okay, so let's dive into camp. I mean, it is a week of all out fun, all out just kids can be kids. Which is huge. It's huge for foster kids to feel that way, because coming from an abusive family or, you know, whatever situation that they're in, they can't be kids, right? They're not able to, they don't have the freedom to, and camp provides that freedom for them. Jeannie, can you dive into what that week looks like for a royal family?
She's the perfect person to ask.
I know.
She makes the schedule.
It evolves from something little to something big. Monday, when the kids come, I've really got to back up. I know that first and foremost, we're serving these kiddos. But what it does to the volunteers is just transformational. Mm-hmm. We show up at camp on a Saturday with our truckload of all of our materials and supplies and equipment, and we take a blank canvas and we make it camp, decorate, set up different play areas. And the way that the volunteers come together on that Saturday and Sunday, most of them, you know, many of them not knowing very many people, it's just amazing to see God's body of Christ coming together to put together camp and bonding. But Monday, whenever the kids show up, It's tentative. The kids are nervous. Wouldn't you be?
Oh,
you're being
yeah.
dropped off and you don't know these people. And well, we've trained our volunteers how to do what we call transfer of care, so that they are there with the parents or caregivers that are bringing the kids to church to drop them off for camp. And so the person who's going to be their camp guide, we call them big camper, they get down at eye level and they introduce themselves to the kids. In many cases, they've met them once before, because we have an event where we say, come meet your camper. But they do a transfer of care saying, so I'm going to be with you for the rest of the week. Foster mom, is that okay with you? Yeah, that's okay. So there's a good solid, you know, they know that the foster parent is leaving and now this is who's going to take care of me. They come to camp and it's just, everybody's just a little on edge. It's a little, they're nervous. They don't yet know what to expect. They don't yet feel safe in this new place and with these new people. And so that's the first thing that everybody's working on, building that trust, building those relationships. And we do that through structure and scheduling, which doesn't, I don't want it to sound rigid, but that helps the kids know what to expect from 1 hour to the next or from one day to the next. And so it's having fun. And it's a scientific fact. If they're having fun, they don't have fear. Mm-hmm. So we get through with the fun and the love. And by Tuesday night, Wednesday, everybody's just having fun. There isn't that nervousness. There isn't that tension. Yes, once in a while, there's a kiddo that is having a difficult time adjusting. But we have worked to align ourselves with a national program called Trust-Based Relational Intervention Training. And we take snippets of that and train each of our volunteers on that. And it's amazing what a great tool it is for us to work with these kids who have come from trauma, and how we understand why they're upset or why they're acting out. That's not willful misbehavior. They're trying to tell us something. And so our volunteers are trained on how to read that and what to do. And so as a result of that, by Wednesday, camp is so much fun. Everybody's having fun.
Oh, that's amazing. It just sounds like such a beautiful week. I wish that I could come. Maybe I will this year.
We want you to come. Yeah. Well, you know, the in the title Royal Family is this beautiful mission that every child is royal. every child has been chosen before the beginning of time. God values each child, and they are created in His image, and they are royal. And so we work so hard. Our color is purple, and we tell them all the time how loved and special and chosen they are. And so all of our activities support this main message that you are loved. And we hear from many of our children who've never heard about Jesus, who've never heard that God loved them. They would say, gosh, I thought God hated me. You know, often children from trauma think it's their fault. They don't understand what's happened, why they've been removed. And they intrinsically feel like if they had been better or have done something different, this wouldn't have happened to them. And so they really struggle with self-esteem and feeling worthy and loved and accepted, especially when many of our children have had multiple foster placements. They might have very big behaviors that are really difficult. And so if you've been removed and you have another new family, another new school, a new environment, a new bed, a new room, new foster kids, every day, everybody's birthday, often our children have never had birthdays. So I was going to say consistent birthdays. They might have had one or a nut here and there. But parents, if they, you know, are from poverty, trauma, addiction, they don't often remember or have resources for children's birthdays. So we put on a beautiful birthday party for them. And so camp is so fun.
To that point, actually, that was one of the moments for me at my first camp, is that I had this little kid, you know, he was six, but very, very small for his age, probably because of neglect. And that was our first year. And if you remember, we did this like circle where we had them all sit in a circle and we gave them all their gifts and then they couldn't open them. And we kind of had a boy gift and a girl gift. They weren't really customized at all like we do now. Like now they're very custom. And this kid is just, it looks like his head's going to explode. He is so excited. And it's a longer story, but he was called Sonic. That wasn't his name, but that's what he wanted to be called. So I was like, Sonic, why are you so excited? And he's like, at my house, I've never gotten a present on my birthday. And he's six.
And to see how we've had volunteers purchase individual presents. So we have on our application process we've requested, how would they like their room decorated? What would help them feel really special and loved for their birthday present? And to see a child open a gift and they just can't believe it. They just can't believe that someone, and then we just are like, oh, thank you, Jesus. You know, a kid who's never had a skateboard before. And, you know, a kid who's never, a lot of our children have never learned to swim because they just didn't have parents who had resources, even a swimming pool, a rec center. And so these first experiences that we have with our kids are so transformational for them and us, too, that we are able to participate in that with them.
Mm. Okay, I'm going to switch gears a little bit. And we're going to start talking a little bit more of the nitty-gritty foster care system ins and outs. What are the biggest needs that you see within the foster care system? And it could be anything. Whatever comes to your mind, what are those needs that you see within the foster care system? Jeannie, you want to kick us off?
I'm going to go back to this training that we use. I think if every foster parent had to go through this training and had to, you know, take refresher courses to remind them of these strategies, I think it would be a much more successful program. I know that their foster parents are required to go through some training. I'm not fully aware of what it all is, but I'm really into it right now because I've been studying recently. But whenever we started using this training and these strategies, that when a kid acts this way, this is what you need to do, this, this, and this, and then you do this. It worked. It was a game changer for us.
Yeah.
Whenever a kiddo was acting out what we would see as acting out, what we were doing before was maybe what we did innately as parents ourselves or what we thought would work. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it was, let's just pray. Let's just pray in their ear. Just let them hear that in their ear. And as a way that calmed them down, but also calling on a greater power to help us with that situation.
To be clear, you're talking about the TBRI training.
Yes,
correct?
Yes. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I honestly feel like camp was, it's like pre-TBRI and post-TBRI.
Mm, yes.
Like,
wow.
It changed everything.
Oh, we were ready to quit.
Like,
we were ready to quit.
The year before we implemented it, we had the cops there several times. We had ambulances and fire trucks.
Are we
going to
admit this?
We had terrible. It was terrible. I mean, we were doing our best.
Sure.
And we were, it was all from the heart, right? But we just didn't know what we didn't know.
Well, what was happening is we were, children were being triggered. Mm. And we didn't even realize that we weren't protecting them with their sensory needs. We weren't giving, you know, a protein snack every 2 hours. And we didn't have de-escalation techniques. And so some of our kids that were triggered, because trauma, a smell can trigger trauma. And, loud noises can trigger trauma. We did have a lot of kids having difficult behavior because of the birthday party, because it triggered the trauma that their parents weren't there for them when they wanted to be celebrated on a birthday. And so we were needing extra help with, mm-hmm. The sweet police officer that came that year, got on his knees and helped us with this little kiddo that we didn't know how to de-escalate. But now we haven't had those anymore.
Yeah, it's
praise
been a
God.
Totally different thing.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, absolutely. You know, to your question, Kinsey, I think the job of a foster parent, these are truly heroes. And these folks that come with a huge heart, they're often very misunderstood. People, there's lots of movies, there's lots of, stories out there that people do it for money, that the foster parents are doing this for money and they're, abusing the kids even more. Now, I know that there are those stories, but from our experience and experience with the social workers that we're working with, they tell us that over 90% of the foster families that they're dealing with are amazing people who love extravagantly. And really what the job that they are doing is definitely a really challenging one. So I think for the church to come alongside foster parents and support them, and we are a form of respite care for foster parents, because often they tell us that this is the only time that they have respite care during the whole year, because they don't know who they can leave their kids with, because their behaviors often are really challenging. And so our program, it's 2 children to 1 adult. And so they have so much care. And then we have a teen that comes alongside this buddy group of 4 kids and 2 adults. And so there are so many folks to come love and support our kiddos. But I think foster children often are very misunderstood because of behavior. So they're thought of as bad and manipulative. And often these survival techniques that we see, these big behaviors, are because it's an unmet need. And so our job as the church, as loving folks, to, Lord, what is the need? I see this big behavior, but Lord, what is it that you want to heal? And how can you use us to meet this need to bring healing?
That's so good. All right, we're going to switch into this one. Which is probably going to be a little bit harder for us to talk about, but what are some of those stigmas that you see around foster care, foster families, foster kiddos? What are those stigmas that you hear from people who may not know much about what you are seeing and dealing with? Ed, do you want to answer that first?
I think the biggest stigma that I feel is that people think, oh my gosh, like, they're foster kids, so they have to have all these problems, and they have to have, big issues, big, emotions, big trauma. I find a lot of these kids are just kids, granted, some of them, let's say 10% of them, yes, they have big, I don't even know how to describe it. You know it when you see it. But 90% of them are just kids, and they want a lot of the same things that my 10 nieces and nephews want, which is attention, right? They want you to care. Mommy, watch me, right? I say that all the time to my mom, right? but they also just want a friend. They want to be, they feel special and those kinds of things. So there's nothing necessarily wrong with them. And I think a lot of people kind of approach the situation expecting that. And I think when you approach any situation with kind of, it just creates a situation where you're going to see those things and then attribute that naturally to that. Right. So it's one of those like, wow, that kid's really hyper and he acts out. Well, that's gotta be because he's in foster. Well, no, he's an 8-year-old boy. Like all 8-year-old boys are hyper and act out, you know, like that's a natural 8-year-old boy in my opinion. But that's the one thing that frustrates me. And I try to approach every kid with kind of a blank slate mentality, right? Like, let's treat him like a normal kid, right?
Yeah.
Well, I think there's a lot of fear for when people think, I don't know if I can volunteer for this program. I know myself, I have no capital letters after my name. You know, you think maybe you're not qualified. And then the fear that my interactions are going to harm this child even more. I'm going to make a mistake and I'm going to hurt this child even more. I'm going to disappoint them even more. And I think to Ed's point, because they are children and they want to be loved and they want friends and they want to feel normal, that their life isn't just about going to court or seeing their court-appointed counselor or having supervised visits with parents who are in prison, or, you know, that part of their life is really hard. And they want to be kids and have fun. And we know that when the brain is having fun, when a kid is laughing, that it doesn't experience fear. So all of those beautiful neural pathways are growing when a kid is having fun. And a volunteer can come and help those good neural pathways, help a child laugh and be a kid. And that brain development, it can be reversed from some of the negative experiences that they've had.
Mm. Jeannie, what are the things that you see that aren't quite truth around foster care?
Well, we've mentioned it in a couple of different ways, but that these kids are bad or that these kids are broken. And they may have been through something really traumatic. But one of the tenets of royal family is to treat people royally. You heard that mentioned earlier. But also one of them is keep moving forward. Don't hound on the past. And that's one of the beauties, is that we get to come with these kids. And yes, we learn a little bit about their past, but we get to pick up with when we meet them and then move forward in a loving, happy way that I think helps with that building of trust in that relationship. I think we have an advantage over foster parents, to tell you the truth, because when we get them, we have the sole purpose of loving on them and having fun and give and have the luxury of that one-on-one attention, that when they're in their home environment, even if it's the greatest foster environment, that doesn't always follow through at home. As we all know, just living day to day, the daily stresses of life take over. But with camp, we get to really pour that into the kiddos.
Yeah. That's so good.
And really support foster parents. I mean, it is so fun to come alongside them hand in hand and look at them in the eye and say, you are doing an amazing job. And thank you for trusting us with your kids. And we will love them and pray for them and we will play with them. And it's a beautiful partnership to partner with the beautiful work that our foster families are doing.
Yeah. I know people who are listening are probably curious and wanting to know, what are the ways that people who aren't involved with Royal Family, how can they get involved? What are those ways that they can plug in? You know, we talked about camp, but Royal Family Kids is so much bigger than just camp. That's probably the biggest thing that you do. But what are those ways that people can start to get plugged in and get involved in? And maybe it is TBRI training, or, you know, what are those ways that they can start making an impact?
So on our end, we do offer the opportunity if they want to come in and start on the club side, or the, you know, kind of club/mentor side. We've had the woman that kind of co-runs club right now, started on the club side because she couldn't take a week off work. So she was like, hey, I want to get involved, but I can't take a week off work. Is there any way we could do this? Normally, that's not the method. Normally, in the past, Royal Family has even said our rules are such where we need you to go to camp first, and then you can do club and mentors. We're of the attitude, no, we don't need that. If you're a good fit, you're a good fit, right? So having them come in on the club side can a lot of times be less intimidating because you're not committing to a week. And not only is it a week, but I mean, we have mandatory training for a weekend before. We have all these events leading up to camp. So camp first is a gigantic commitment, which we're very, very happy that a lot of people make. But if it was looked at as, hey, just show up on a first Saturday, hang out with these kids and see if this is your deal or not, that's not a very big commitment. And we've had quite a lot of success bringing people in from that side because they can just, let me feel it out, kind of get a feeling. And again, club is 2 hours, but it's a mini dose of camp. It's a mini dose of a 5-day event. And so you get a good feel for how it works and you get a good feel for all the volunteers because what is it? What's our ratio? Like 75-80% of our volunteers come back over and over and over again. So we have a great retention rate. And so it's a great way to get involved.
Yeah, and all our volunteers go through extensive background checks and FBI fingerprinting. And so, and you know, when they show up to just check it out, you know, you're never alone with a child. And so we make sure that it's a really safe environment and, you know, to ensure that everyone's safe. Volunteers are safe and kiddos are safe. And so only people who have been background checked and fingerprinted are taking the kiddos to the restroom. And there's always two people and never one-on-one. And so it's exciting to see because what God does with Royal Family is everyone has these hidden talents that they might not use all the time. You know, you might love to sew, and we've had ladies come sewing at camp, and Ed's mom was one of them. She's so precious. But, you know, that gift of sewing with a grandma, you know, our kiddos maybe have never had that experience. You know, when you're pulled out of your home, you don't have often access to aunts and uncles and grandma and grandpas. And so we have grandma and grandpas that come to camp. We have volunteers in their 80s that come and read stories in our library or help with the tea party. We have gentlemen who are wonderful woodworkers that come up to camp and help with woodworking. And so it's amazing. If you have a passion for something, you know, if you've been a lifeguard, lots of our kids need to know how to swim, and that's such a victory for them when they learn. We celebrate when they learn how to swim. But Jeannie has lots of other ideas too about how volunteers can get involved in other ways besides camp.
Well, it's not always activities just at camp. There's a ramp up of getting prepared for camp, and so there's shopping for supplies, establishing the craft activities that we're going, defining what those are going to be each day, because there's usually two or three different craft activities each day. And so we have some folks that will help us with identifying those and what supplies are needed. And then they or another group of people will go do the shopping or ordering the supplies. There's a lot of ramp up of activity, administrative type of things. Right now, we know we need help fundraising. And we're keeping our eyes and our ears open for folks that have that talent or have that personality trait, that know how to ask, where to ask, and how to seek those funds, whether they be personal funds or corporate funds. That's just another area that I know we know we need help.
Mm. Yeah, if you are a photographer, you know, often children in foster care do not have pictures of themselves. And so giving a child a photo album at the end of camp where they are the star, where they we have pictures of them climbing the rock wall or being in the tea party or, you know, the dunk tank, you know, all at the carnival. So a child has this beautiful memory book that they take home with them. And photographers are, you know, that they can use their gift for a week to give a child a memory that they will last forever. And we know because now that we've been here 12 years, our campers come back and tell us that they have saved these precious little memory books that they've saved the MP3 player with all the music from camp, that these memories have made such a lasting impact of God's love for them. So a videographer, we do a beautiful video for the kids at the end, and then when we come home, we show this video to all of their caregivers so they can see what their kiddos have experienced during camp. So there's lots, if you love to perform, or there's just so many ways that God uses our gifts and talents together as a family.
Yeah, because understand that there's kind of, in both the mentoring club and with the camp, there's staff, which is kind of always ahead of us, and then there's the people dealing directly with the kids. So at camp, I'm a big camper, right? So I have my two little boys, and then there's four boys in our little buddy group. But then, to her point, like, we show up to crafts and they've already set them up and they're already ready to go, and there's women that work just the crafts area the whole time at camp, right? And then there's people that are kind of constantly ahead of us setting things up for our next activity. And then there's people behind us breaking down what just happened, right? So the kids never have to deal with that. And honestly, I don't either, which is so amazing. Same thing with club, right? We show up to club at 10 o'clock on a Saturday morning and it's already set up and ready to go, right? So there's a lot of ways that people can get involved if they feel like, I don't know that it's my personality, or I don't feel like, you know, for whatever reason, I don't want to have that direct relationship with the kiddo, or kind of, I don't feel like I would be good at that. Great. Well, there's a lot of other things we can have you do that still help the cause more behind the scenes, right? If that's the kind of person that you are, more the behind the scenes, we would love it, right? We mm-hmm. can never have enough help.
Yeah, and the staff really helped the camp be successful. And club.
It wouldn't even go off the ground without the staff.
Right, yeah, logistics team that come, as you say, before and behind every activity.
Because, I mean, big campers like me show up to camp and it's like, all right, when's the fun start? Like,
that's right.
And then all day, it's just like, okay, what's the next fun thing we get to do? Great, let's go, you know? And so it's a very different relationship. For me, at least, especially at camp, because I'm just a big camper, I'm just there to have fun with the kids. Whereas at the mentor and club program, it's a very different relationship because I'm running. So I'm much more like logistics and, you know,
sure,
organization, and it's much more work feel, I guess.
Those are really great ways for people to get involved and plugged in.
One of the ways that we have developed this team is by including teenagers, mm-hmm. the 16 and 17 year olds. They're in high school, but they've step forward and volunteer, and they commit. They come to our training. They're part of the whole Royal Family volunteer team. But with the way that the kids interact with them, it's pretty beautiful. They're younger. Maybe they're more in with the current music that's going on.
They're cooler.
Yeah, they're cooler.
They're way cooler.
Yeah.
A lot more hip than me, I will say that.
But the kids interact with them mm-hmm. in such a way that it's sometimes easier to talk to the teens than it is to talk to their adult big camper. Mm-hmm. They play a vital role mm-hmm. in what we do at camp.
Absolutely.
In their relationships with the kids.
And club. We've had our teen participation at club has really spiked the last couple of years, and you can tell a difference. It's a huge, and it's fantastic.
Yeah, they bring so much energy and joy for our kids, because that's just another component that our kids might not have. They might not have older brothers and sisters that can pay attention to them and speak into their life. And often their abusers were not teens. Their abusers were adults. And so teens feel really safe. And for teenagers to get involved, when you know, really, the justice movement, when you start as a teenager, it really changes the trajectory of your life, because you become so sensitized to a world that needs you, that, you know, that you can make a difference. And that's a really powerful thing for a teenager to experience, because they walk away from camp knowing that they made a difference in many children's lives. Many children, because the teens interact with lots of different children. And you know this, like at the end of camp, when all these kids are around you and they want you to sign their T-shirt, and they want to give you that one last hug before they leave. Teens make an incredible impact.
Right. I mean, I think that when young people get involved in justice work, regardless of what that looks like, right, it could be, yeah, volunteering with the Royal Family. It could be volunteering with Covered or, you know, whoever. Once they get involved, you become far more aware of the needs of the people around you and less, well, what do I need right now? Well, it's all about me. And they start to become and develop this sense of, I can actually care for people around me well, and I can do that for the rest of my life and feel like I have the capacity to do that, which is a really cool thing to watch young people develop that sense of awareness.
Well, and it also develops a sense of gratitude because, you no one has a perfect family. No one has a perfect parents. God didn't create perfect parents. Only Jesus is perfect, and we all make mistakes. And to realize that, you know, my parents really did try. My parents, and how grateful we are to be in the community of believers that where we live. And I think that gratitude has also been such a gift for our teens.
I think for all the volunteers, honestly. I mean, that was, even being in my late 20s when I started, that was a big thing I took out of camp the first time was, wow, like, my parents were really, really strict when I was growing up, to the point of, you know, I was kind of resentful of that. Coming out of camp, I was like, holy cow, I had the best childhood I've ever. I called my parents, like, thank you for a great childhood.
Yeah.
Because, you know, being so self-absorbed as teenagers and, you know, kids can be, and even adults, you just don't realize the other side of, like, wow, there's this whole other group of people that wish they had parents like mine. And I was resentful for my parents, right? And so it gave me a new appreciation. And I think it's a fountain of gratitude.
Yeah. All right. So we are going to dive into our very last question. And it is, what is one thing that you want those listening to know? Jeannie?
We have the unique opportunity of serving these kiddos ages 6 to 12. And then by the time they turn 13, they're no longer eligible for Royal Family Kids Camp. And out of the volunteers' gratitude and their initiative, we have volunteers like Ed, who then started Club, because we didn't want to let go of them whenever camp ended. And there was another set of volunteers who said, what are we doing? We're letting go of these kids before they turn 13. What can we do? They started the teen camp. It's called King's Teen Camp. I say that to try and enunciate it.
Good job.
So they take kids that are 13 to 17. And what we're seeing happening last year before, and again, we anticipate it happening in this year, is that some of these kids were our Royal Family kids. They went to teen camp, and now they want to come and volunteer as 16 and 17-year-olds. They want to volunteer at camp. They want to give back. They want to accept that new role and that new challenge to give back and serve kids that was them a couple of years ago. So we're very excited to know that we've kind of got this full circle going on. Not only that, we have volunteers literally from age 16 to 80. Not exaggerating, we had a couple of 80-year-olds. That this ministry can meet the needs of these kiddos with this whole array of volunteers serving them. I think it's just beautiful.
I love that. Kim?
You know, God is a miracle-working God, and his name is Redeemer and Wonderful Counselor, Almighty God. And we know that there isn't any trauma that is too far from his reach, and he loves children, and he loves their laugh, and he's a God of joy, and he's a Redeemer. And so if you want to be part of God's redemption story, He not only redeems kids' lives, but he redeems our life too. And the what God does in and through us, through Roa family, is nothing short of a miracle. His grace is all over it, and he takes volunteers without capital names after there are names, and he turns us into an army of change and an army of hope.
Mm, I love that. Ed?
I'll go a different direction. My thought would be don't wait, right? So when I was younger, I always wanted to give back and do charity stuff. I grew up a Boy Scout. I'm an Eagle Scout. And a lot of Boy Scouting is service, right? And so like you kind of get in that mindset. But I had this mindset in my 20s where it was like, well, once I get to this point of my life, then I'll give back, right? Then I'll do charity stuff. Then I'll give money to charity. Then I'll make a difference once I get my own life to this point, right? And God completely interrupted that for me because of pushing me into Royal Family, right? And when I totally felt like I was not at all ready. And honestly, I felt like it was like, oh, I'm going to go do this one and done. And it's not going to be a big deal. Well, God had different plans, right? And then everything in my life and business has improved a thousandfold since I got involved with Royal Family, right? I feel like God has blessed my business in huge ways, my personal life in huge ways. Not as a, I don't want you to think, you know, like I'm doing this to receive this. I don't look at it at all like that in a transactional sense. It's just, that's what's happened. And I'm very, very grateful for the fact that I didn't wait, right? That I didn't like, well, wait till all the green lights are green until you leave the house, right? That's just not practical. Even though it feels that way, I would encourage people to, if you feel called by God to get involved, just get involved, just try it and then see what happens. And maybe that's, you know, going to be the blessing that you didn't know you wanted and needed, right? And maybe that's, because for me, I never, if you would have asked me when I was 25, you're going to be involved in a kids program and you're going to run a kids program and you're going to be doing it two or three times a month, I would have laughed in your face. There's no way that was in my plans. It wasn't even close to on my plans. And now it's like my life, right? And I'm super happy with it. I love it. It's what I'm passionate about. And I can't wait to grow it bigger and better and do more and more and more of it. But I couldn't imagine if I'd have been stubborn enough to say, not right now, I'll wait till my business gets to here, or my life gets to here, or I get married, or whatever I was waiting for, right? So act now would be my follow God now.
Wow, that's so good. Okay, well, thank you, seriously, each of you, so much for spending time and giving your time, offering your time up and your wisdom, and all of the things that you do with Royal Family Kids. Thank you.
Thank you, Kennedy.
It was fun. Yeah. As you could tell, we love talking about it.
I didn't even know what this was about. It was like, if you want to talk about Royal Family, yeah, I'll do that.
Thank you.
For sure.
Yeah, thank you.
So sweet.
A big thank you to the Royal Family team for spending time with us on this episode. If you want to get involved with camp, mentoring, or even just learn more about Royal Family Kids, you can visit royalfamilykids.southeastcc.org. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Justice for All Podcast. Justice for All is a Southeast podcast.